This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. I am 3 days away from my trip to Hong Kong to see my new grandchild, Barry.
I've played bridge in Hong Kong some years ago when Michael Weir and Mary Ellen were living in Hong Kong, and we visited them and we played in the City of Hong Kong teams and we won the mixed pairs.
How cool is that? Well, I will be having a look to see if I can scratch up a game. What do you think would be one of the best tips you could give me when you go to a new country? Don't know the lingo. You don't even know how to get around. When I went to Penang, it was easy because I was with a group of people. So what do you reckon?
I say smile a lot. Try and look friendly.
Okay. I'll do my best.
My other tip, don't take any photos of your grandchild to show everybody. You'll drive them crazy. They'll all die of boredom.
Okay. I've got lots and lots of pictures of her.
I'm sure anyway, you have. But yes. I'm telling you, they don't want to see them.
All right. Hey, I was having a look at the 10th birthday weekend Congress. You've got two choices. Either go King's Birthday Weekend Auckland or King's Birthday Weekend Hawke's Bay. And because we're not in the South Island, I'm sure there's a Congress down there. The intermediate pairs, Hawke's Bay, at this stage has got 23. The juniors have only got 5 pairs entered and the Open has got 48. Not too bad. And in the teams, intermediate 11, juniors 1, and the Open is 33 teams. With the Swiss pairs on the Monday, 49. Have you got some figures for Auckland?
I think the teams, they've got 20 teams.
Look at the pairs for us, Barry.
I did have a look at the pairs as well. The numbers are a lot lower in the pairs. Those Hawke's Bay numbers, I mean, I'm sure they were a lot higher pre-COVID, but they're putting a lot of effort in over there to get people there. And yeah, hope they can get their numbers up to somewhere near where they were. Only just the 10 tables in the pairs at Auckland.
They have an intermediate junior.
In the intermediate junior, they have got just 4 tables at the moment. So things are looking a little grim there. I guess there's still time. So the team's not looking too bad.
See, yep. Some Aucklanders and Waikato Bay planning people are electing to go to Hawke's Bay, which is one of the reasons why I brought it up. They're spreading their wings a little bit.
Yeah, it's tough out there organising some of these congresses. I mean, Auckland's not so bad because they hold it in their club rooms there, but at Hawke's Bay, they have to organise a venue. They have to organise all sorts of things. It's quite a big deal and must be a bit scary trying to organise something like that and not knowing that you're going to get the numbers. So please support them.
We were talking with Judge Julia earlier on and we were talking about pre-alerts, and she's giving a ruling during the bidding and everything. But in terms of pre-alerts, how many do you have to have? And can you make stuff up as you go along?
You don't have to tell them that you play 5-card majors or anything like that. All you need to do when you get to the table is say, we're playing Ekol, multi-2 diamond, and our doubles over 1-no trump are unusual, like single-suited hand or whatever it is. Yep. Or anything that's unusual that they might not expect. For most people, just a very quick rendition of, we're playing Ekol with 4-card suits, or we're playing Standard American with 5-card majors and week twos. You don't even have to say week twos because that's not something unexpected. It'd only be if you're playing something that is slightly different. We're playing 2 diamonds, which is weak with both majors. If you're playing something a little extra that people don't expect, then you should alert it. If you play low from doubletons when you lead, you should probably pre-alert them to that. I know it's all on the system card, but these are things that they might not expect. But it will usually be just a few things. There won't be too many pre-alerts for most pairs. Because if you're playing in a pairs event, you know, every time you get to sit down and play 2 boards against somebody, you have to go through this drama. You really don't want to be there all day telling them about everything on your system card.
Yeah.
They might want to know your mother's maiden name as well. Please don't start pre-alerting your mother's maiden name.
Have the Phoenix on the Bridge Zone this week, but we do have Wellington Regional Committee member Catherine Goff. Welcome, Catherine. Thanks, Mariana. Nice to see you guys too.
Catherine, the Wellington region, it's not just Wellington, is it? Where does it go to?
There's 12 clubs in the Wellington region, and on the Kapiti Coast side, if you start at the top, it is Ōtaki, then it comes down to Paparam, then it comes to Waikanae, and then it goes into the Wellington clubs, then go up the other side of the island, which is the Wairarapa side, and then the huts at the bottom of the Rimatakas. South Wairarapa, the next club, and the last club on that our side is Masterton. So 12 clubs.
How's things going at some of the Wellington clubs? Are they thriving or are they struggling? Are they working hard?
It's quite interesting you should ask me that, Barry, because I played in a tournament at Masterton on Saturday, which was an intermediate and a junior tournament. There were other players from Wellington and Palmerston North. And I just said to one of the girls who came from Kairangi, I said, what do you think about this happening in Wellington? And she said, do you know, I think we're doing really quite well. We feel all quite positive at the moment. I can't say that for all the clubs. I feel there's a real positive vibe about Wellington.
Cool. It's good to hear. And the committee got any plans for the upcoming year? Is anything different they might be doing?
No, our focus, and it has been for the last year or so, the first one is we focus on juniors, intermediates and novice players. And we want their participation to grow in the game. And our second focus is face-to-face bridge. We just feel that people should come back to the clubs. That's what we're really focusing on. Like, there's probably a financial loss for us to focus on that, particularly for the regional and the open tournament. It's probably not what everyone thinks. That's what we want to focus on. And we want people to come back to the clubs again and play face to face.
Yeah, that's a big call. And it's not been as easy as we'd like.
No, it's not been easy, Barry, particularly for those ones that I mentioned, the region and the open tournaments. And I can understand why, probably. And there's probably no easy answer to that. That's our focus.
I often wonder, if people were playing bridge, what is the number per week? Most people have a bridge number. I like to play two times a week, or I like to play three times a week, whatever that number is. More and more I've heard that it's one, and we need to get away from one. One time at the club is not enough. So how do we entice them back?
That's a good call, actually, to say that.
I don't know
what the number of most people are. I play online myself once a week, but I also play at the club once a week. My own club, I know a lot of players in that club play twice a week.
Right.
Probably more than 50%.
That's face-to-face you're talking. They play twice a week.
That's my own club. I'm not sure about the other clubs in Wellington. Like, Wellington run a lot of online games, I mean.
I've played in a few of those. They do a good job.
Yes, they do a great job. That's really
good. Isn't it? Auckland have a great online service as well.
Yes, they do.
That you can mix it up and go to Wellington and Auckland. Yep. If you stuck with it right from the get-go, you had a captured market. But trying to break into that online market is very difficult now, where people have already selected it's either Auckland or Wellington. They don't really do anything else.
And it's quite interesting, Mariana. I'm just speaking for my own club. And my own club is South Wairarapa. We've got 105 members. We've got a fantastic little club. A couple of players, maybe, who probably wish they weren't, are open players. The rest of the club is all intermediate players. So, and not a lot of tournament players. So in our club, some people play online on a Monday night at Wellington. Some people play online in Auckland. Probably that 90% of the club would play twice a week at the club. And then there's a little tiny online game on a Wednesday, which is at Taihape. And a lot of our members play at Taihape online on a Wednesday night.
Wow.
So there we go.
Yeah. When I was down in Palmerston North, poor old Taihape, they always used to cancel their tournaments because people just wouldn't make that trek, you know. It was just too far.
Yes.
I love hearing that they've got a great online buzz.
It's $2 a night and it's a fantastic place. It's very friendly. Sometimes it's more South Wairarapa players than other players. Someone's playing for Wairarapa in Northland somewhere. Every week they have their Wednesday night game.
That's great.
I think it is good to mix it up a bit, because it certainly is a lot easier to play online. Never leave the lounge.
Don't you think you're missing out on something when you don't play? I can just quote our interclub. Our Wellington interclub had 60 teams probably a few years ago. Now we're down to 44, I think it is at the moment. Then it was all online. Now, just speaking from my club again, and other clubs in Wellington, I noted the same thing. We would leave at 4:45 from here. We would drive down to Wellington. We'd go out for dinner. We had our special places we went to in the hut. We had these fantastic people who just loved us coming, of course. Then we would tukey off to our bridge game, and we'd play a game, have a little drink of wine at Chippies at the end. Then we'd drive home, and we'd get home at midnight. And we all thought it was just fantastic. And then, of course, COVID comes along, and we can't do that anymore. And so it goes online. And speaking of my club again, I don't think our club will ever not be online, because even though we just love that experience of playing and visiting the restaurant and camaraderie and everything, we just love that. Now we would look at that because we've got the chance that we've played online for 2 years now. I don't think we'll ever not play online. I think we're missing out on something. People say it's still quite social. It's not really. It is social, of course. You chat away to people.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
At the end of the day, you don't have your chippies and your wine, and you don't have a PM. You just sort of go away, and that's the end of it. And you can't really compare it.
Probably the cost comes into it as well, I guess. Those trips over there.
The petrol costs as well, because, as I said, it's an hour and a half for us to go to Wellington and then an hour and a half back. So that's 3 hours' travels. We always... four at least in a car, and then the club would pay for the petrol. We always got a petrol allowance.
So you mentioned that you've got the majority of your club is intermediate. Is there a lot of intermediate tournaments available for the members?
Well, although there are a lot of intermediates, there is not a lot of players who play in tournaments. That's another thing. Probably in our club, half a dozen would play, probably four juniors.
So how's Masterton going with their clubs and your club? How are you going with your beginner lessons?
We finished our beginner lessons now. Our beginners have just gone into the Monday night group. We had 10 came to our lessons, and there is 9 that are playing. Last year we virtually lost no one because they just get absolutely 100% looked after. At the moment, they have come into our Monday night session, and we divided that into two sections. We have about 10 tables in our first section and about 4 tables in our second section, which is our beginners and their mentors, and they play. And we'll carry on playing like that for another few weeks. And then they'll gradually go into the main room.
That's pretty good numbers, really. I mean, if you could get 9 new members, that's nearly a 10% increase, isn't it?
I think our numbers are amazing. We've got a great tutor, and as I say, they get absolutely looked after, and we encourage them 100% to stay.
Go on, Catherine, name the tutor. Let's give them a boost.
Well, our tutor is Gareth Rapson. He was in Wellington. He was a teacher. He taught at Rongotai College, and now he's living in Greytown.
So how old is the South Wairarapa Club?
Probably around 30 years.
Right.
That was started
off. And that's Greytown, isn't it?
It's in Greytown.
Beautiful little township, that is.
It is a beautiful little township.
But yeah, started off in the 90s.
Yes.
Barry, I walked into one of the shops down there one time when we were, I'm not too sure what we were doing down that way, and Barry Saunders from the Waratahs was in the shop, made my day and my husband's day. He's an amazing musician, that fella. In fact, the intro and outro music for the Bridge Zone is actually by the Waratahs.
Okay. So how long ago was that, Marianne?
It was called the Hom Shop or the Hymn Shop. And it sold everything to do with males. Then hats.
Oh, okay. No, that shop's not there now.
How long ago were you there?
Oh.
It must have been a long time ago, because I've been here 8 years and I don't remember any hymn shop.
Because remember, I left Palmerston North in 2016, so I think maybe it was 2017.
I came in 2016 to here. I used to play in Palmerston North a long time ago as well. I just got to say one other thing that we do for the beginners. This is the whole area. We subsidise each club $500, so $500 to each club. You have to apply for it, but it's just by
invoice. So that's to go through your costs for your lessons, whether it's advertising.
Yeah, for your lessons. In our case, we haven't got our own club room, so we pay. So it goes towards our rental of our rooms. A lot of clubs use it for their print posters and leaflets and things. It goes to whatever they say. What they have to do when they do apply for this $500, they have to say how many
beginners they had last year, and in this case, 2023, and how many beginners they have from the class of 2023, how many they have signed up members in 2024. And so in that way, we can monitor just how many beginners attrition. Are staying on. Yeah, it's around about 40%, just over 40%. But last year, there were 200 beginners came to learn lessons.
How many?
200.
Across the region?
Oh. Across the region.
Wow. Yeah.
About 80 are still signed up members.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good retention. I mean, you're always going to lose some, and some will come back later, and some will, I won't. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? And you don't know why the reasons they've come out, but I think it's a pretty good retention, actually.
How's that for incredible numbers across Wellington region for lessons? Just amazing. How's your region going? The final segment of our chat with Catherine will be played next week. Stay tuned.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Good to see you back, Judge Julie.
Having a bit of a busy time, but I'm not working tonight, so yay.
Patrick thought that he should get a rise.
Zero times whatever is still zero. I've got a grandson who's got the zero times table hanging on a poster inside the toilet. And I keep saying I should have a bet with my 8 and 9 year old grandsons about the fact I can say the zero times table really, really fast.
Interesting question arose at a tournament recently where there was a player with a little bit of dementia. And I guess there's going to be more of that in the next 30 years. The director gave her partner permission to write the final contract on the back of the bidding slip once it was turned over and put it in front of her so she knew what the auction was and she wouldn't have to ask six times. So is that legal? How do you feel about that?
You are always allowed to know what contract you are playing. So somebody at the table has to tell you what it is that you are playing. Now, I've been frantically sort of looking through the laws here and I haven't found it yet. You're not entitled to ask about the bidding after you've played to trick one, but you are entitled to know what the contract is. Always.
We were just saying a funny story. This is from many years ago, so I guess I can say it. I might have forgotten. Where a partnership, we're having a bit of a argument, shall we say, and partway through, declarer forgot what contract he was in, so he asked his partner what contract he was in, and she refused to tell him. The opposition also weren't too keen on him at that point, so they refused to tell him as well. So he had to call the director to find out what the final contract was.
There's a lot of things about being bloody-minded, but I'm sure the laws aren't in there about that.
So the director came in handy. I guess they had to track down the bidding slip and tell them.
Okay, here we go. Following when the opening lead is faced, dummy's hand is spread, and it is too late to have previous calls restated, which is after declarer or either defender at their own turn to play have been allowed. Declarer or either defender are entitled to be informed as to what the contract is and whether, but not by whom, it was doubled or redoubled. So you are always entitled.
Oh,
so that doesn't matter whether it's trick one or trick 11.
Doesn't matter when it is. If you are defender or declarer, you are entitled to know what the contract is. So when we bought in bidding cards, we had a period of time where people didn't bother passing. Often we had the situation where someone had doubled and no one had seen it, which is why you should always have everything pass, 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 because sometimes people haven't seen what's happened. And you are entitled to know. And for beginners, allowing them to know what the contract is really important.
And this player with dementia who might have to ask several times, do you think it's, I mean, it sounds fair enough, really, for the director to allow?
I think entirely fair for the smooth progress of the game and the fact that you are allowed to know what the contract is, that you can have something that says this is what the contract is on the table. I wouldn't expect it in a 10 APs or higher. By top open players, they need to remember, and you're not allowed memory aids, but I do think there are circumstances where we want to help people be able to keep playing, and that is important.
Oh God, that might happen to all of us in a few years.
I mean, it doesn't hurt. There are some things that you could do that would be bad because they would have information attached that you are not allowed. But if you have someone that needs to keep asking all the time what the contract is, for goodness sake, just let them know what the contract is. But as I said, there would be a limit. I mean, an 8-point tournament, I wouldn't be having the contract on the table for the duration. I mean, we expect people to remember. And there is a wonderful thing about an anachronistic Homer that Patrick won, which was to do with him making a very serious mistake years ago before they had a Homer, where they played a Moisian fit and he decided he was playing in no trumps. He was playing in hearts and they led a diamond and he ducked with the ace. And he had ace suit opposite singleton. They were playing in four hearts, but he'd forgotten. So here he was, ducked one round. He ducked the second round. And on the third round, he discarded a trump. Because he was playing in no trumps and the contract was hearts. So there are good reasons why we won't allow top players to know what they're playing in. Because we enjoy the fun when they forget. If we're dealing with beginners or people who have got some issues, they're still enjoying playing, then let's relax a wee bit and just proceed without too much interference.
You were also talking about bidding cards before that people just forgot to pass. When you're using bidding boxes, how long does the contract have to stay down?
Doesn't matter whether it's spoken bidding, written bidding, or bidding boxes. Bidding goes away after, when you put out the opening lead, you are entitled to know the auction until after you've played to the first trick. That means if you are a defender, after you've played, if you are a declarer, it means after you've played from dummy. So it's irrelevant which form you use, because even if the cards go away, you are still entitled to ask for a review of the bidding up until you've played to trick one.
Right.
Okay. Bidding boxes create a problem because when dummy goes down, often there's not enough room for dummy and the bidding to be out in front, particularly if you're Patrick and I with a big relay sequence. But your opponents are always allowed to know what the bidding was up until they have played to trick one of their defender.
Thank you.
We just want to quickly talk to you, seeing as you haven't been on for a few weeks, about pre-alerts. What do you need to...
So in all fairness to club players, a lot of the things we regulate are around tournament play, both nationally and internationally. However, so pre-alerts are for those things that are not required to be alerted in our regulations, but that our opponents may need to know. There are various things that are not alertable. They are, any opening bid is alertable, doesn't matter how high it is. But any response to an opening bid may be alertable up to and including three no trumps, but not higher. So if you open one heart, Barry and I bid four diamonds, splinter, it's not alertable because it's above three no trumps. And the opponents are expected either to ask or to ask at the end of the auction to find out what it means, or in some cases where it's a bit more murky, to pre-alert. And doubles, another thing that isn't alertable. Q-bids as opposed to control bids. So if we look at control bids as when we're showing partner aces and kings or singletons or voids, Q-bids are when we're in the middle of a competitive auction or where the opponents have bid and we are bidding their suit. Michael's Q-bid, unassuming Q-bid, to name a few, are these situations. They are not alertable because we know that our opponents do not want to play on our suit. However, wisdom has said that not only is a Q-bid a bit of a suit that you have shown, but a Q-bid is also defined of a suit that you have bid. So if I'm playing with Barry and he opens one no trump and it goes past and I bid two diamonds showing hearts, a three diamond bid or a three heart bid or a two heart bid are not alertable. You don't alert Q-bids, bids that the opponents make of a suit that you have shown or a suit that you have bid. I play a big club system. If I open one club and my opponents bid two clubs or three clubs or whatever number, it is not alertable, irrespective of the meaning. So we have a thing called pre-alerts, which is about what bids mean, where there is a bit of fuzziness around it. And most commonly, we say to people to ask.
The rest of Judge Julie and her rulings on pre-alerts is coming next week. Join us then. Have you got a tip? Are you prepared?
I am. A couple of these tips are pretty old, but they're things that you need to do. So they're worth just bringing up again. You know, this first one, I always feel like a bit of a fraud telling people to do this because I don't do it myself. But that doesn't mean it's like, do as I say, not as I do.
Not as I do.
So the first tip is don't play to the first trick too quickly. We've all heard it before, and you've seen how quickly I play to the first trick, haven't you?
Yeah.
Speed of light. Sometimes I play to the first trick, and then I think, hopefully it's not too late. Don't play the first trick too quickly. Force yourself to stop and think when dummy comes down. Look ahead and plan your play to at least the next few tricks. That's a really good tip. If sometimes you feel like under pressure to play, they've led something, you feel, oh my God, I've got to play something. Taking a bit of time at trick one is good for the opponents too. They get a chance to digest the dummy and think what they're going to do. Think ahead and try and plan the next few tricks and what you're going to do. Concentrate on the opening lead for a few seconds so you remember it later. That's a good thing to do. And decide what it tells you about the leader's hand, whether they've got a lead from a long suit or a strong suit, or whether they've led from a shortage. If they've led a 9 or something, it's more likely to be a shortage than it is to be a long suit. If they've led the 3 or the 4, it's likely to be from length, possibly an honour.
I see.
So those are good things to consider at trick one. Mentally review the bidding. If one of your opponents has bid, try to come up with a general picture of his point count or her point count. You know, if they've made a weak jump over call or something, that's very revealing.
You can ask questions about the lead, though, can't you?
You can ask whether it's a 4th or a 3rd or a 5th or it's an attitude lead. You can do that while you're doing your thinking at trick one. Those are my 3 main points. Don't play the first trick too quickly. Concentrate on the opening lead for a few seconds and mentally review the bidding.
You know, when opponents lead and partner puts down the dummy and their lead just happens to be the singleton, if blooming dummy goes along and plays it, don't you feel like smacking their hand? It's like, don't you touch those cards. They belong to me, not you. And I'm not ready to play yet.
Some people don't see anything wrong with it. There's a singleton and dummy, so they know that you're going to play it. Some people just play it automatically. Don't do that. Let partner look at the full hand, including the singleton, while they're making their plan and trying to digest what they've got between the two of you. Don't play that singleton because then the next person will play and all of a sudden partner's under pressure to play a card. Or even if they've got two cards the same, like Jack 10, it doesn't matter which one they play, just leave them there. Let partner think before they call for a card.
You can't participate as dummy and that would be a form of participation, wouldn't it?
Well, I suppose so. When there's a singleton, it's a bit hard to argue that they're participating, really. Doesn't matter what dummy does, that singleton's going to get played.
Have a great week, Bridge, everybody. I'll catch you when I get back.
Catch you next week. Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.